Welcome to Burning River Radio, where the bugs are the buggiest and the takes are the hottiest.
Sure.
I'm Joe Koblitz, Twitter at Burning River BB. And he is Justin Latta at JL underscore baseball. And of course, on Twitter, And I'm going to talk about Twitter way too much on this today, but it's funny. I have to clear, like, that's, I got rid of my personal account like 6 years ago and just went on the Burning River Baseball account as my personal account and my, and the site's account. So a lot of times an article will come out and I auto tweet every single article that comes out on the site, because the whole purpose of the Twitter is to promote the site, and the purpose of the podcast is to promote the Twitter, which promotes the site. Or something like that. And so, like, an article will pop up on my thing, and somebody will Twitter yell at me and be like, "You're an idiot." Or someone will give me a compliment and be like, "That's great." And I don't write everything that's on the site. So a lot of times it'll be somebody else wrote it, and they're either giving me credit or getting mad at me personally, thinking that I...
when they like it, and you know, blame somebody else when...
No, I generally, if somebody says they like it, I say, no, it's okay. Kate wrote this. And when somebody hates it, I say, no, bring your hate to Justin, Gavin. I don't need that hate.
Yep. That sounds all right.
That's pretty much how it is every time. And it's because, like, the ones that get the most comments are the Kate articles, and they don't even know it because she's so positive about everything. And it's not necessarily an analytical take. It's the old, it's more of an old school approach. And John has that approach too. And that's what people like. Like, it makes them happy to see that type of thing. Whereas when we really go in and I'll write something about how Josh Tomlin is not a very good pitcher, and I'll get a lot of hate for that, even though I have stacks of evidence in the piece I write. You know, so they don't want evidence. They want...
Maps are stupid, as we know in today's society, that facts are stupid.
Yeah, well, they want butterflies and rainbows, as they say. Which brings us to the Indians playoff roster. They set it-ish this morning. It's not officially set because they don't have to until Thursday. But they set it on Tuesday, essentially saying what they were going to do. And I think there's definitely some surprises on it. I thought Michael Brantley was going to be on the roster based on the last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I also thought Yandy Diaz was going to be on the roster based on his usage in the last month. It's like Francisco Mejia, you knew, was not going to be on the roster because they never used him. Like, if they were going to use him, he would have been there. But Diaz was starting almost every single game. And while he wasn't finishing them, they kept going to him over and over again. And they were moving around Ursula. He played first, second, short, and third. I'm sure he would have played outfield if they had asked him to. They really weren't using Eric Gonzalez at all. So it really seemed like the plan was to start Diaz, and then Ursula is your emergency replacement everywhere else, and that saves you a bench spot. A Brantley on the bench,
mm-hmm,
instead of Eric Gonzalez. But instead, they brought Eric Gonzalez and they brought Josh Tomlin, which was another speculation, is if they went with Brantley, that maybe they wouldn't bring Josh Tomlin at all, because he is the Indians' seventh best pitcher, eighth best pitcher. Depends on who you ask. Five, though. They can't.
Okay.
Starting pitcher. Like, can you make an argument that Josh Tomlin is in the Indians' top five starting pitchers?
Unless you really, really don't have faith in Danny Salazar. Well, yeah, if you really don't have faith in Danny Salazar to be a starter, then maybe.
Okay, but then you're also saying he's better than Ryan Merritt, which,
yes,
I don't think case. Well, you've said that in the past that you think he's better than Merritt. I don't think he's better than Merritt.
I do. I think he's got a little bit better stuff, and
we don't need to get back into that again. But so there's the toss up, I guess there. But you're talking about like the seventh best pitcher. There's no way he's better than Clevinger in any way.
No. So, no, I think there's every stat.
Well, I can't say in any way. He has much better control than Clevinger does.
Well, yeah, Clevinger has the least amount of control out of every starting pitcher on the roster.
Yeah, he walks way too many guys. But I think that may be why they bumped him into the bullpen in a point. But he did make the team. He will be in the bullpen for the postseason. Salazar will be in the bullpen for the postseason. And they have four starters who are actually considered starters, which gives them six starting pitchers on the postseason roster. That's so different than last year. And it really, to me, it'll make it so that they can do what they did last year, only better. Last year, every game, it was Miller, Shaw, Allen. Like, every single time out, that was all he trusted out of the bullpen. And your starters were sometimes going four. I think Merritt went four innings. There were a couple starts that Kluber in the World Series didn't go through five innings.
What are you talking about?
Bauer went. He did? In the last start, he didn't.
I don't think the last start. He said a couple. That was the only start he didn't.
Okay, so he went five until the last start. Bauer had a start where he got, I believe, one out.
Tomlin in game six did not do very well.
No, I'm talking about the ALCS.
Oh, and yeah, in the ALCS. Just
the
I think
the
he
whole
got
playoffs.
Yeah.
He either got one or two outs in that one game before his finger exploded and they had to pull him. The point is, like, with the pitchers going short and then they were forced to extend the bullpen, first thing, you're not going to have that problem with the pitchers now because you don't need to save Kluber for three times a series. He only needs to pitch twice per series. So you can ride Kluber the distance. He can go 120 pitches, I would say, in every start.
A normal rest.
Yeah, and you can just run with that. Same thing with Carrasco. You could probably take to 110 pitches if you need to. Bauer, since he's only going to pitch once probably per series, you could go 130 if he's pitching well enough to merit that.
We haven't, obviously mentioned it yet, but I think the fact that they have the way they set the rotation up,
Power
available for game four.
I'm trying to make some people happy before I make them mad.
No, let's just make them mad right away because I totally.
Oh, if you flip flop on this, you're in trouble. You're going to be in more trouble if you flip flop than if you just stick
to your
guns.
I like the idea. I think as I've had more time to process it, maybe it's more that I understand it and not so much like it. I don't know. I can see both sides of it. I definitely think this is a great way to go because of it sets them up the best to win a five-game series. It's not winning game one.
In case you missed it, Trevor Bauer is going to start game one, which he did start game one in the ALDS last year, but the reason he started game one was because Kluber was out with a groin injury. He missed his last start of the regular season in the first of the postseason because of that groin injury, and he came back and pitched in game two. So it's going to be – and Carrasco was always scheduled for game three, according to what I had written down, at least. When they restructured the rotation those last couple weeks of the season, they kind of set it up for Kluber to go game one, Bauer to go game two, Carrasco to go game three. So they just flip-flopped Bauer and Kluber. Carrasco is still three, and the silliness of – they're saying that Tomlin is going to go in game four, but I have a feeling he doesn't, or if he does, it'll be like two innings. That's not going to worry me at this point. I believe they're setting it up this way so that they can win the series in at maximum four games, and then Kluber can go game one in the ALCS. I feel like they're really shooting for, like, this is how we're going to win the World Series. They're not shooting for this is how we're going to win the ALDS.
Exactly. That was my whole point of this whole thing is – last year and everyone, this is what everybody jumped on Francona for. Because last year he had said, well, we're trying to win the game. Today's game. You worry about tomorrow. And that's still true. But I think last year's your strategy is not going to be the same because, as we talked about, they're healthier this year. You have
you have Encarnacion.
Rely on.
Yeah, you've got Santana, who's had his best season offensively since 2014. You've got Encarnacion, who's healthy. You have at least Brantley, who's on the team, where he wasn't on the team last year. So even if he's just a pinch hitter, that's an extra bat you have. Chisenhall has had a good season, although he hasn't been great lately. Jackson has been at least as good with the bat as Rajay Davis was. He has not been anywhere. He's been nothing on the bases where Davis was a real threat.
Yeah, that was going to be hard to recreate.
But then you have Lindor and Ramirez, who have pretty much repeated their previous seasons, if not added to them considerably, both, you know, on the bases and with the bat.
They've come close to being about as good as they were going to be on the bases, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think you've replaced everything that you lost, which was just Napoli and Davis. And pretty much everyone is better. Gomes is healthy, and he's hit well in September. He did at least. Perez hit decent in September, but not as well as Gomes did. So I think you have a lot more to work with right now. And I think it's almost like, go back to the winning streak last year, the 14-game winning streak. That last game of that winning streak, it was like, we have to put everything we have in this. We have to throw Bauer in extra innings so we can win this one game because we need this team record. This year, they just blew through the team record and kept going and going and going. And they never at one point in the streak went, oh, no, we need to pull the panic button and do everything we can to win this game. And it never happened, even when they lost at the end. We have to win.
Toward the end of the streak, Tito was making a lot of pinch hits, and
I don't feel like he never did anything out of the normal. He never did anything that would jeopardize the next day.
No, he did. Well, they didn't have to because it was September.
Exactly. So I think that that's kind of what we're talking about now, is in the postseason, he doesn't think he's going to have to jeopardize the next day because he thinks they're going to win. So and of course, I remember very well thinking that they were going to win in 1996. And 1998 and 2001.
I was worried about a 96 type letdown.
So we'll see, obviously. And if you follow Mike Hattery, Jesus Christ, the guy won't give up on how the randomness of a short series. But, you know, so it is there. Any team can win any series. I think there's, I mean, shit, if in 2001 when the Indians lost to the Mariners, if they had not thrown that guy who got beat up by his wife and instead thrown CeCe the last game or whoever it was, I can't remember if it was CeCe or Bartolo, who was in line to pitch the last game five on short rest.
We have against Chuck Finley.
If they had just went with anybody instead of Chuck Finley.
They could have beaten five and fly at that point.
They could have beaten the best team, best regular season team in baseball history in the ALDS in 2001. And obviously the best regular season team in baseball history then lost in the ALCS. But the Indians could have beat them early, and they were nowhere near as good a team as that Mariners team was.
I mean, they were good. I don't know. They were flawed, I guess. They weren't.
CeCe was a rookie, and they had a lot of older guys that were kind of Juan Gonzalez, and it had an MVP season in the regular season. But, I mean, they were right at the edge of their career. He never had a great year after that. And Robbie Alomar never had a great – a lot of them really started falling apart. I need to get back to this for a moment, the rotation. Now, I don't necessarily have anything wrong with it. Like I said, I think they're naming Tomlin the starter because that's the respect thing, just the reason he's on the roster too. I think it probably should have been Clevinger because you know Clevinger's not going to go five innings, not more than five innings probably. He went six innings in like six straight starts, exactly six, and then they had to pull him. So you would expect, I would think, to drop that by one in the postseason. So you'd expect him to go five. That's what I would do personally and not have had Tomlin on the roster. Obviously, they're in a different situation where they're all friends and they owe him respect and that type of thing. So they have to put him in. So that doesn't bother me. That's whatever. Even Bauer pitching first doesn't really bother me. One guy who is really going crazy about it on Twitter was mad about it because he was saying they could lose a four-game series and Kluber only pitched once and Bauer pitched twice. But I don't I don't think they would throw Bauer twice.
I mean, they could bring Bauer back in game four.
Yeah, that's what he was talking about. Is like you start because you're losing, then you're like, oh, we got to start Bauer on short rest.
I don't really see the Indians losing two of three starts from
Kluber and Carrasco.
I mean, okay, let's say you lose game one. I don't feel like you're going to lose both Kluber and Carrasco starts.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to win two of those three starts. I do.
Yeah, probably. Now, my problem with this whole thing, though, like I said, it's not the Bauer and it's not Tomlin. It's the sanctimonious people on Twitter.
Oh, boy.
I swear, every time something happens on Twitter, or something happens in real life, a lot of times the first people to comment on it on Twitter are the offended party. And so in this case, the first people to comment on the Indian starting rotation are the people going, what is he, crazy? You start your best pitcher game one so he can pitch again on game four. Like, that's what the offended people were at the beginning. They were saying Tito's an idiot and whatever. And then immediately after those 10 people talk, 5,000 people come out and say, that guy's an idiot. We all need to band together against that guy because he's wrong. And the status quo is correct, or what, you know, and the trust in Tito and all those other things. And it's just it's such the easy route to take. And I know you did it. I think Gavin did it. And 100 other people I saw on Twitter are out there going, you think you know better than the manager of a major league team when you have access to Fangraphs? And honestly, sometimes I think I do. Because I think he has the information and he doesn't use it.
I would not agree with this.
If you look at it, but if you read, like, let's say, and you're saying essentially, and a lot of people are saying any manager of any major league team knows more, or it does the right thing. It's not that they know more, it's that they do the right thing all the time, so anyone who ever questions them is completely wrong. But if you read any baseball, but that's essentially what they're insinuating by saying, because he's a manager of a baseball team, he knows more than you, and you can never question him. And that's what I got. Even Francona. Francona has obviously made mistakes. Mm-hmm. Right? We've seen him make mistakes. We know he made mistakes. He's not infallible. Everybody on the planet makes mistakes. You have to be able to question everybody on the planet. You can't give so much respect to the position that you can't question it. If you read any of the just think about Ken Rosenthal. You like him, right?
Sure.
No, you don't like him?
Depends on what it is. I mean, he's a reporter, not really a...
Okay, never mind.
I'm not really sure where you were going with that.
Am I thinking of the wrong... Oh, no, Keith Law. That's what I'm thinking of, Keith Law. Okay, sure. So Keith Law wrote Smart Baseball. Mm-hmm. There's a giant section in there devoted to how stupid it was to have Francisco Lindor bunt every single time he came up to bat in his rookie season.
Yes, because bunting is stupid. We know this.
But okay, but Francona was either telling him to or letting him do it.
And later we figured out Francona was not telling him, he was letting
him. Yes, he was letting him do it. Well, that's a mistake. There's no way you can say that wasn't a mistake. He should have went to him and said, here are the numbers. Here's what the chances are of scoring one run in this situation compared to one run in this situation. Here's the chance of scoring multiple runs in this situation compared to multiple runs in this situation. What you're doing is dumb. Stop doing it. I mean, if he was, let's say a runner was getting on base, and every time he got on base, he would attempt to steal second, and he got thrown out 80% of the time. How long do you think they'd let that go on?
Hopefully not very long.
Exactly. And bunting, every time there's a runner on first, is just as dumb. It's giving away outs that you don't need to give away. It's really stupid. So I that was a mistake he made. So we can agree he has made a mistake once in his life.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was saying he hadn't. I mean,
okay, but you said, I mean, one of the things you said is that you can't question him at all, or maybe you didn't say it, but other people said it, you can't question him at all because he's a Hall of Fame manager or whatever. But yes, you can question him. If you can't question him, if you can't question the front office, then we should have shut down this site 6 years ago. I think that's all between
questioning and saying they're not doing the right thing because you know better. There's two different things.
I don't think it is, though. I think when you question them and then you look into it and say, I like the Lindor Bunting example better than this one, than the setting the rotation for the ALDS, because like I said, I don't really disagree with him on that. But the Lindor Bunting thing was a clear-cut example of he is doing the wrong thing. So I am questioning him, and I think I'm smarter than him because I've read in the numbers, I've seen the evidence that bunting is a waste of time unless there are runners on first and second, and the hitter after you is a better hitter than you, and the hitter after him is a better hitter than you. Because chances are, if the guy after you is better than you, but the guy after that isn't, then they're just going to walk the guy after you and pitch to that guy after that. So you have to have the two hitters following you to be better hitters than you, which is a lot of the times the case with the number nine hitter. And you have to have runners on first and second, or else there's no point in doing a sacrifice bunt ever. Situation, okay. you should probably be swinging away. So we know this, right? Because we've seen the evidence of it. I saw evidence of it in 2002, I think. I read a book that pointed that out, and I'm sure it was out before then. So you can question him and say he's doing the wrong thing. I really don't. Like, you have to be able to.
Okay, that's fine. I just, like I said, I think there's two different things. There's two different points.
Okay, but did you think he was doing the right thing in that case?
No.
Okay, so you questioned him, and you said he was doing the wrong thing. So if you read your tweets today, you would have been calling yourself out.
No.
Because you thought you were smarter than him because you thought that he shouldn't sacrifice a bunt in that situation.
Okay, it doesn't mean I'm smart. It just means that he's...
Okay, so maybe everybody else doesn't think they're smarter when they're saying that this is a silly way to set up the rotation. Maybe just don't judge people for what they say. Maybe just let somebody state their opinions. I don't think anyone's saying Francona should be fired because he's starting Bauer in game one. Nobody's saying Francona's an idiot because he's starting in Bauer. They're just saying this is silly. They should start Kluber there. That's their opinion, is that they should start. Nobody's saying I know more than the manager does. It's you and the thousands of other people that are putting those words in their mouth. And I see it. It's not just this. It's a lot of different topics where the initial people will come out saying something, and then just an overwhelming flood of people will say, no, the initial group is an idiot for saying those things.
I mean, it's possible to have a different opinion than someone on stuff and still understand they might know more.
I don't want to look up the exact...
Just because you have a different opinion doesn't mean you're right.
You're not. That's not the point of this.
My point was today. You're talking about the things I've tweeted, and that was my point. Like, just because you have a different opinion doesn't mean you're right.
No, you had a string of tweets that were calling out the people who were questioning Francona and saying that they thought they knew more than the manager.
And some people were assuming they did.
I really don't think that was the case, though. I really don't. It's a straw man argument where you're saying, oh, this random person who I'm not going to talk about directly, but just indirectly, this guy thinks he knows more about them than the manager does, so he's an idiot for thinking so highly of himself. I even think about it this way. Like, in the 1970s or whatever, or 1980s, Bill James probably thought he knew more than a lot of front offices, and guess what? He's working in a front office now.
Yeah, he figured it out. I mean,
he did know more about baseball than the front offices did. So it's possible that some guy, and you could say it's just Bill James, but I know other people who've worked for, before it was Sports Daily, for Blogwin. We've had guys that work for Blogwin that now are in front offices around baseball because they did know more about baseball than the guys who played it.
I'm not saying, okay, that was not even the same argument.
Well, you changed it, so I could change it.
How did I change it?
Uh,
I mean, not everyone who had a different opinion then on the rotation thing today specifically was wrong or right. It's just a different opinion. But some people also questioned. I mean, okay, this is where it's at. Like, people said they're overthinking it. I think that's a bad way to put it. They're not overthinking it. They clearly have a logic to why they did that. I mean, can you see that? You can see the logic and why they.
Yeah, we already discussed it. That's why I said I didn't disagree with it. Okay, here we go. This is the exact tweet that really bugged me. Sorry, just because you have an opinion, a Twitter account, and read Fangraphs doesn't make you more qualified than an MLB manager. That is directly saying, that is you, directly saying that everybody who's questioning the manager thinks that they are more qualified than an MLB manager. And you didn't say Francona. You said an MLB manager. So that includes Eric Witch and Manny Acta.
Oh, to be fair, I did say probably not Brad Ausmus.
Not in that tweet. Obviously, everyone is entitled to their opinion and to second guess. But saying what they're doing is wrong and you are right is insane. But that's not. To say that what they're doing is wrong and you're right is not insane. Because we just said about Zach Bunting. I am definitely right about that. And it's not my opinion. It's the opinion of a ton of people, including the Indians front office, I'm sure.
We have, thing that's got direct evidence behind it.
Yeah. So he was wrong and I was right. So I'm insane?
When there's evidence to prove otherwise.
Say that. That's the whole point, though. And I think this is really what happens when you think that you're better than everybody else. And you are not the only person who's done this. I've seen this a lot of places. And like I said, on a lot of topics where people will just come out and I'm better than this guy because he doesn't agree with this other guy. There's no infallible person on the planet. There's no call to authority that's that great.
I think a lot of people just happen to miss the logic behind.
I think you just need to take the L on this one.
No, because you're conflating two different things.
I'm saying that what you wrote was egomaniacal.
Okay, and you're allowed to take it that way, and I'm allowed to say that's not how I meant it. Just the same way I can assume the people tweeting that they think that Francona's an idiot for doing what he's doing and assume that means they think they know better.
Yeah, they might on that one. I don't think anyone's saying that they know more about everything, but they may on that one thing. And I think part of it is what makes Francona such a great manager is the fact that Josh Tomlin is on this roster. It's that his players love him because he's always been a player-first manager forever. And, I mean, honestly, he made mistakes too in that he went too far when he was in Boston because that's really what made it fall apart. It was that he was letting them do whatever they wanted to do, and they decided it was like substitute teacher day or something and started getting a little crazy.
And you have to have faith in the players not to do that kind of stuff.
Exactly, and I think the Indians are way better than that. I think that they respect him more for one thing, maybe because he was older and already had the World Series when he came in there where the Red Sox were too familiar with him. And, you know, and they won their rings. So in 3 years, maybe the Indians will fall apart because they won a World Series. And, you know, you lose that motivation, especially they won two. You know, you win two after you haven't won in 100 years.
Maybe.
I could see your motivation disappearing pretty quickly. I've always said if the Indians win one, I'm happy forever.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that.
Just give me one, I'm ecstatic.
I can't disagree with that.
So I can see where that fell apart, but that's where he is so good in doing that. As far as I'm aware, Manny Acta was universally hated by the team.
That was pretty obvious in the days after he got fired.
Yeah, and Eric Wedge was hated by at least half the team. And Hargrove was loved by everybody, I think. I don't recall players that did.
I mean, it depends on which stories you believe, because
I guess I need to see some other stories then, because when he was fired, I recall them being fairly upset.
Yeah, I mean, I think he ended up playing good cop to the front office's bad cop at times, you know, after the Eddie Murray trade and some other stuff. I think he ended up being able to play good cop just because of those situations, but I think he had some Eric Wedge type run-ins with, I think, Jeff Kent or some other stuff.
And I believe that this is Francona, in my lifetime at least, has to have more control than any other manager. Like I said, in my lifetime, I don't recall any manager having this type of front office control. At least, I mean, when they talk about it, when people talk about it, who is Francona going to put on the 25-man roster for the postseason? The manager doesn't do that. Like, that's a GM decision.
I think in good situations, it's everybody.
Well, yeah, they have input, but ultimately it's the GM who makes the roster up, and it's the manager who makes the lineup up. That's kind of where the line has always been drawn in baseball history.
That's more conventional. You're thinking Moneyball, where you have Billy Bean
But that's always how it was done. It was put out in Moneyball, but that's always how it was done. And managers often got players that they didn't want. And obviously that was a big plot point in Moneyball, the book. I only saw the movie once, so I don't really remember.
Right, but I mean, that's the whole point, is that it shouldn't be like that.
No, and that's great. But it's a completely different situation. It's so different than anything else I've ever seen. And it's different than any other team. Maybe the Royals are a little like that with Ned Yost, because he always seems to have the guys he wants out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to re-sign the guys he wants them to re-sign, which makes them a worse team. But most teams, I think, are pretty strict down the line still. Maybe that's just another advancement the Indians have made, because obviously, and it's fun following, I'll mispronounce his name, Kyle Bodie.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun following him, especially recently, because obviously he's a huge Trevor Bauer fan. He's from Ohio, but he's not necessarily an Indians fan.
He grew up one.
Yeah, but he had some. They went into that in Passan's book, The Arm. There was a chapter about driveline.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. I haven't read it yet. So that's
yeah. One of the later chapters is about driveline, and it's about how they talk about how he grew up a fan, and then felt like he was ostracized or something like that. And then he's got back into it recently because the Indians are one of the biggest teams as far as using weighted balls and taking on the routines that he uses there. And obviously Bauer is like their Post-a-shot, he has to be their biggest. Yeah. He's got to be their biggest name client.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of anyone who's bigger than him. So,
yeah.
So there's a big connection between the two. Although the Indians have asked him to work for them, I believe, directly, and he's declined. I think that was in the book as well. It's fun seeing him talk about it, because just as there are advanced stat people, you know, and Keith Law is one of those, there are advanced exercise routine people, if you want to, preparation, like the physical side of the
training,
game.
Yeah.
And he is one of those guys, and it's nice to see the advanced stat people and the advanced physical training guys both saying that the Indians are on the forefront of their fields.
And they should be. I mean, that's the way they've gotten here. They're
well, but any team could do it. Like any team could have done this. The Royals could have done it, but they didn't. The Royals were like, no, let's go old school. But the Diamondbacks, until they fired their entire front office and moved on, were like, we're going to do this the most old school way possible. Then they fired all those guys, and like 2 years later are in the postseason. That's funny how that worked. The grittiness did not get them into the postseason.
Money doesn't buy everything.
Well, no, gritty.
Oh, it's about grittiness. Grit. Oh, I guess
grittiness. No, grittiness. Because they wanted grit. That's what they wanted. They wanted tough players who...
They should have hired the will to win. To be a manager. I bet you the will to win knows more than their manager.
Torrey Lovullo?
No. I'm kidding. Maybe...
I like Torrey Lovullo.
Who was the manager before Torrey Lovullo?
Kurt Gibson.
Maybe the will to win knows more than Kurt Gibson.
I mean, Kurt Gibson has that experience of... He would never say that because I think he loves Kurt Gibson. I'm pretty sure he's in love with him. But Kurt Gibson has that postseason experience. That's also important.
Yeah, that's the only way it matters. The only thing that matters is if you have postseason experience. You know, that's...
If you win the World Series is all that matters. Rings.
Rings.
One ring to rule them all. And I believe Gibson has two.
How is that possible? Wouldn't that destroy him?
No, I think you got one with the Tigers and one with the Dodgers.
Wouldn't that destroy him? You can't have two rings.
Nah, you can have two rings.
That would make him too power hungry.
The Mandarin has like 10 rings.
I was going into your Lord of the Rings reference, but you just totally no-sold me on that.
I switched it to a different nerd reference.
Well, I was still on the Lord of the Rings reference, and...
Okay.
Yeah.
Does that make... Tony La Russa Saruman?
Yeah, because what would Dave Stewart have been?
So one of them is Sauron and one of them is Saruman.
I think that's too much for Dave Stewart because Dave Stewart was just the worst general manager ever. Although apparently John Capuano from the Braves not so much better.
What if Bud Selig was Sauron and Dave Stewart was
Saruman? That makes more sense.
Or Rob Manfred. I don't remember if... I think Manfred might have been in by the time they started doing that. This is really
we've gone
falling apart. We're gonna get beat in the wild card game, Justin.
Yeah?
This podcast is going to lose the wild card game. Because we can't keep it together. We need more playoff experience.
We have none, so we're automatically out.
Well, no, I think we did Tribe Time Now shows in the playoffs last year, didn't we?
I wasn't around for that, so I couldn't tell you.
So you're a rookie.
I don't have the experience factor. You might want to consider somebody a little more experienced than I am at this point of the season. I'm good enough to get you through the season.
I have a point on experience, if we can talk seriously for 3 seconds.
Sure.
I think what a lot of times when people talk about postseason experience, and I wrote about this a couple weeks ago about Mike Napoli and Edwin Encarnacion. And I think a lot of times what happens when maybe a player plays well his second or third time in the postseason, it may be a simple factor of endurance and being used to playing in that many games. Because like Mike Napoli last year was really incredible, and it sucks that he was so bad in September and October that it completely made you forget that he was awesome through August. And I really think both him and Josh Tomlin, who was terrible in August last year, and then took a lot of September off, or at least a couple weeks of September off, and barely pitched at all. I think both of those guys last year, particularly Napoli and Tomlin, also though Lindor and Naquin. I think all those guys.
The whole second half.
Okay, but I'm saying specifically in October and September, all four of those guys were really bad. And I think a lot of it was, and Tomlin's was in August, and Naquin's carried on through October as well.
The rest of the year and then to this year.
As did Napoli's. Well, Naquin barely played this year.
Probably played his last game as an Indian.
I think that's probably true, but he barely played this year, so we can't really count this year. But my point is, those guys all didn't play much the previous season. Napoli missed was really a part-time... he was a right-hander only facing left-handers, and there aren't that many left-handers compared to right-handers in the world. It's a minority, left-handers. So In pitcher, there are more in baseball than there are in the rest of the world, but still there aren't that many left-handed pitchers. So he did not play that much the year before, and he didn't play that much the year before that. And he set a new career high as an old man. You don't want to be setting career highs in gameplay. And so I think that really had a lot to do with him coming apart. And I think the same thing is true of Lindor. He was playing in his first full season because he didn't play the beginning. And the minor league season is a full month shorter than the major league season. So it was the longest he had ever played. And the same is true of Naquin. It was his first season at all. And Tomlin was coming back from surgery where he had only played a few months the year before. And he blew by his innings total real early in the season. And he just kept going. And you could see that he hit a wall. Like, he wasn't even himself. Like, he was way worse than what he is capable of doing in August. So all those guys, I think, hit that point. Whereas this year, you've got Encarnacion, who seems to play 150 games every year, and the Blue Jays have been really good the last few years, so he's had that postseason experience, so he's gone deep into the playoffs. He's had 150 games and then plus two rounds of the playoffs.
Right.
So he's used to it. So he's still hitting fine. Ramirez never struggled last year, but now he has a full season from 2016 and another full season in 2017. So he's got that. Lindor was great in the last month of the season. He has the same thing. He already played through the World Series. This year, it's not that big of a deal. And I really think that can help. In some cases, it can hurt. I think with Justin Verlander years ago, when he had his one bad season, obviously he was great last year. He should have won the Cy Young, but maybe it was 2015 or 2014. One of those years was really bad for Verlander. And it came off, like, every year he was pitching like 230-some innings in the regular season, and then the Tigers would go deep in the postseason, and he'd pitch, you know, every single game that he could for them. And so I mean, maybe there's some worry about Kluber, although he missed a month this year, so he's really – I mean, by the time the postseason ends, he may be on track for what he should have done in the regular season, you know, in a normal year.
He would, yeah. So I think they were a little less than last year. Only missed one start last year.
Yeah, so I think in general, they're in such – we talked about the health early on and the improvement of adding Encarnacion over Napoli just as a baseball player. He's obviously better. Like, Napoli's peak is as bad as Encarnacion ever gets. So there's obviously an improvement there, and the money shows it as well. Napoli didn't make anywhere near as much as Encarnacion makes. So in addition to the obvious improvements like that, and the addition of Jay Bruce, and the addition of Joe Smith in the bullpen, so you've had some additions. But in addition to that, all these guys are not just playoff experience, but the experience of playing not 162 games a year, but about 180 games a year, a little less than that.
I mean, you got it. I mean, well, we saw it with Lindor picked it up in the playoffs. He was very good in the playoffs after having a rough.
Yeah, and I think
now he has that. I mean, it's more like endurance and training. I mean, you have to know what it takes to.
But I think if you don't play in 170 games, then how can you get used to playing in 170 games?
Right. Exactly. It's the same thing with the minor league season. That's why I don't understand why the minor league season's shorter. That's also why I don't understand why they...
Well, AAA is shorter because you want to bring those guys up to the majors. And by the, you know, if they had brought up all those guys to the majors and kept playing in AAA, they would have had to bring up the entire level below. So at some point, you have to stop it. Right? Some level has to stop early.
Yeah.
To make up for those player losses.
Well, like, I can understand rookie ball and... you know, low A. I would say by double A, though. And double A does go a little bit longer, I think, than... I don't know, double A goes the same.
Well, they all go pretty much... Yeah, they all go 1 week in September. I think Mahoning Valley played like two extra days after everybody else, but everybody else was wrapped up by the first week of September.
Those levels I can see going shorter, and it's the upper ones, I think, that should go longer, like double A and up. We're way, way off topic again, by the way.
No, I think it's all there. I mean, the point is... to play in 170 plus games, you have to play in 170 plus games. It's when I started running with the ROTC, they always made it clear, like, for the ROTC, for the PT test, you have to run a 2 mile. And they said you cannot improve your 2 mile time by running 2 miles.
Right.
You have to run 3 miles or 4 miles, and then you can improve your 2 mile time. But if you just run your 2 mile every time you go out there, you run the 2 mile, you're going to have the exact same time every time. But if you can run more than that, then you can speed up. Then when you are running a 2 mile, you'll have that extra endurance and you can speed up. And I think that's really, you have to physically do it. There's nothing, it's not like you finish the season and then you go weight train while everyone else is playing the playoffs. It's not the same thing. You have to be out there playing baseball. And I mean, of course, this year we get the World Baseball Classic to add into it.
Right. That's the other thing too.
Miller played in, but then he missed some time with injury. So that kind of evened out. Lindor played in, Santana. I can't remember everybody else who played. Roberto Perez, but I don't even know if he got into a game. He was there. And I don't know that if the quality of play was so great that it was that different than spring training. I honestly wouldn't blame it for anything. I don't get when people do blame it for anything.
Spring training is just too long anyway. We think we know that.
Well, it's going to be shorter next year.
Hopefully. Oh, yeah, I guess it will be because they're starting the season earlier.
No, they changed the rules.
Well, it's going to be players fall off days, which makes sense.
It's going to be shorter forever. Yeah, they've changed how it works, and it's going to be less than a month forever. This year's was especially long because of the WBC, but yeah, it's never going to be that long again. Which, I mean, I moved here for 1 month a year, and they're shortening my month. And the Indians aren't even playing Instructs this year, so I miss out on that. Oh, it's just
having withdrawals.
Well, AFL starts next week, and I'm probably not even gonna start. I'm not even gonna be able to go because I'll be watching playoff baseball for the second year in a row. Yeah, because before that, when I first started the site, it was like, oh, okay, I have nothing to write about. It's October, November. I have nothing at all to write about because the Indians aren't in the postseason. Let's cover the AFL and write about that. But now, and Instructs, you know, and write about Instructs. But now that they're in the postseason 2 years in a row, it's really nobody cares about that. So I really, if you were looking for a lot of Instructs and AFL talk for me on Burning River Baseball, I'll probably do a postseason review of the AFL, but I really don't think I'll write anything else. It just isn't important when they're in. And it sucks because Francisco Mejia is going to be there. So
playing third base.
Yeah, there is some interest, and I'll definitely go see him at least a couple times, but I won't.
Yeah, like I would have. Third base, you definitely need to see that.
Yeah, I'll have to go there. Well, and the cool thing is I got to see Greg Allen last year and Bradley Zimmer last year. So now that you get to see them, everybody saw them this year, and it's like, oh, they're amazing. Yeah, I know.
That's all. You cover minor leagues. Like, that's exactly what happened with Jose Ramirez. Everyone's like, oh, my God, I can't believe Jose Ramirez is that good. Well, if you saw Jose Ramirez in Lake County, you know that.
Yeah, you definitely deserve a lot of credit. You and Jake Dungan, maybe?
Yeah.
Who I believe wrote about him when he was in Akron. Somebody recently came out a month ago and said, Jose Ramirez wasn't even a prospect, and now he's a top 10 player in baseball.
Yeah, that's so wrong.
Yeah, he was a prospect. You just didn't know it because he wasn't on Baseball Prospectus' prospect list. So that's the same thing. Like, we can talk about it now, about the guys. Not, I don't mean now, like this episode, because it's too late. But but we can talk about it now as in, like, the present, about guys that we've been seeing in the minors who we really like. And maybe they aren't on some top prospect list because they weren't taken in the first round, or they didn't make a lot of money, and maybe their stats aren't the best, and that's kind of kept them off. But we know them, and that's why we tell people about them now, and then we can later say, we told you so.
That's what we like to do.
Okay, we're going to end this with some trivia because I just put a bunch of stats in. Literally spent like 8 hours the last 2 days putting stats in spreadsheets. So did you know, now, okay, this one's maybe controversial because Baseball Reference does not credit, at least as of the second, has not credited with Terry Francona with all the Indians wins this year.
Right.
Which is odd. He obviously missed a few.
Brad Mills managed.
Because they don't credit Brad Mills with the wins either.
So who do they credit?
Nobody.
Well, that's strange.
So I would just give him to Francona, because if you give him to Mills, it's going to look like the Indians fired their manager midseason and then hired him back 2 weeks later.
Yeah, George Steinbrenner doesn't run this team.
So that's kind of weird. Because I have the manager stats for every manager ever. And it's pretty much, and they add up, if you add up the wins and losses, it equals the wins and losses in Indians history. And there's never been a time when somebody has a win, even though they weren't the manager that season. Right? They weren't the manager at that time.
Okay.
Everybody who has a win or a loss was the manager at the time. It's not like this guy took a day off and this guy. They always just credit him to him. So I think eventually he's going to get these credited to him. Assuming he does. Or we could just say since the Indians have been under Francona. He's went 454 and 354. Who's the only Indians manager to have more than 100 more wins than he had losses?
Lou Boudreaux.
Hall of Famer, Al Lopez.
Oh, that would have been my next guess, yeah.
Not only did he have 100 more, he had the same amount of losses that Francona has, and he won 116 more games.
He was a manager of a good team, yeah.
That's how you get in the Hall of Fame. He also won a lot with the White Sox, but he also had 6 ties. Do those count? And he went 0-4 in the postseason. That's kind of ugly.
Yeah.
Do you know which Indians hitter? Maybe this is too easy. An Indians hitter moved into the top 10 career ISO this year.
ISO? Oh, no. No idea. Santana?
No, Edwin Encarnacion.
Oh, for a single season?
No, for career.
Oh, he's only had one 500, year.
Yeah, 500 game minimum.
Oh. 500 game? You mean 500 at bat?
500 at bat. 500 at bat minimum.
Okay.
Is that not a fun one?
Not surprising.
That's not fair. Okay. I was surprised because, I mean, obviously he's been good this year, but I didn't realize how his season wasn't historic necessarily. He didn't get in the top 10 in home runs or walks or the numbers that he was great at. But I was really surprised at how incredible his numbers were considering he was the Indians' second best hitter.
Yeah, for one single season, right? So that's definitely interesting.
Yes, I thought, as a year, I mean, he had 100 RBI, which is always that benchmark. He almost had 100 runs scored. He had 20 doubles, 38 home runs, and 104 walks. Even 133 strikeouts isn't bad. Wow, I didn't even notice that before. He had 133 strikeouts, led the team. Last year, Kipnis and Mike Napoli both had more than that.
Yeah, they were the second lowest team in strikeouts this year.
Mm-hmm. And of course, as a team, the Indians set records for K per nine and total K in a season. And for individuals, this year, record setting alone, just on the team, not major league records, the Indians set the record for the pitcher with the highest K per nine in 60 innings, the highest K per nine in 100 innings, and the highest K per nine in 200 innings, and they're all different pitchers. So Andrew Miller set the record for K per nine in 60. And obviously, Kluber set for 200. Do you know who 100 is?
Cody Allen?
He didn't pitch 100 innings this year.
Oh. Carlos Carrasco.
Danny Salazar.
Danny Salazar actually finished 100 innings pitch. That kind of surprised me.
Yep. There were actually a few guys surprised me with the games played. Kipnis and Brantley both played more games than I recalled them playing. It felt like they were hurt the entire season, but they Brantley played, I think, 88 games.
Yeah,
so about a half a year. And Kipnis played quite a bit. And even with Miller missing time, he still played quite a bit. All right, Kluber. Oh, by the way, that 11.7 for Kluber is the highest K per nine in Indians history by any pitcher with a qualifying innings load. So 162 innings now, 155 innings back in the day. Highest ever. The previous high was 10.7, and he had 11.7.
Who was the 10.7?
Sam McDowell, 65. No.
That makes sense.
And the funny thing about that is every year, if you follow me on Twitter, you see these constant stat updates for the milestones, especially late in the season, because I add on the single season numbers as well as the career numbers. And so you've seen them up there. So I'm constantly looking at that list of like the most strikeouts and the highest K per nine. And in the last 5 years or so, Kluber was always nearing those total K numbers. And he's got, I think, now three or four of the top 10. Most strikeouts in a single season. Maybe it was three of the or four of the top 12 or something like that. But he never had that K per nine, and this year he didn't get. He was second to his 2014 season in total Ks, but he had the highest K per nine. But we know the K per nine. His WHIP was 0.87. That's the highest Indian or the lowest Indians WHIP since who? This will be my last one.
I'm going to go all the way back and say Bob Feller.
No, you didn't go back far enough.
Oh, Addie Joss?
Addie Joss. Literally, the record setting. Addie Joss set the record for lowest whip ever in 1908. It was broken like 3 years later by, I believe, Walter Johnson. And Joss still has the highest career whip, or lowest, sorry, best career whip, whatever, lowest, in baseball history. Kluber is now second in Indians history in career whip, and he's second in single season history, both behind Addie Joss. And that is really incredible. And I'm sure there's people who don't like whip because it's existed for more than 10 years. So I'm sure there's advanced people who don't like it. But it's literally saying how many people you allow on base.
Which is a great stat.
Yeah, and Kluber does not allow people on base. And ERA has flaws, and that's hopefully it's funny when we talk.
Is if you have hits that are scored, well, I don't know. Do errors added into whip?
No.
So, I mean, errors could affect your whip if they're not – if it's a bad play that's not called an error.
Yeah, so you're saying poor defense could affect it. And it doesn't credit doubles as being doubles and triples as triples and homers as homers. They all count as one, which is the same problem with batting average. So there are flaws in it, but you can't score a run if you don't get someone on base. Obviously, it's easier to score a run. If you don't ever have anyone on base, you can't score. Yeah, home run counts as someone on base.
Right.
So obviously it's easier to score if you hit a home run or a triple than if you hit a single or walk. But still, you cannot score. And he is literally the best pitcher in Indians history at avoiding that, because Addie Joss played in the 1910s. He died in 1911. It wasn't just the dead ball era. It was like the rotting corpse ball era. I mean, 1919 was considered the dead ball era, and they at least had some home runs. This was the absolute death, and he really. So Kluber is like, we have to appreciate the fact that not only does he strike out more batters than any pitcher ever in Indians history. Per nine, I think K per nine, he's behind Cody Allen among pitchers who've thrown 300 innings, but obviously he's thrown over 1,000 innings, so. is a little more significant. But he doesn't let he doesn't walk anybody, which is something Bob Feller really struggled with that. And Sam McDowell walked people all the time. And these are like the greatest pitchers in Indians history are McDowell and Feller. They're McDowell, Feller, and Joss are 1, 2, and 3, and you can order them different ways as long as McDowell is always third. But, you know, the first two of those guys walked people all the time. It was very common. They threw a ton of pitches. I'm sure they were out there throwing 150 pitches a game, but they walked a lot of guys. Kluber doesn't walk people. He doesn't give up hits. And he strikes out almost everybody else.
We're also in the strikeout era, too. You have to take that into consideration.
Yeah, so it's going to be lowered because of that and because he strikes out so many guys. But if you look at things like his average and on-base percentage allowed and stuff, he does not allow base runners. And you can't say that Sam McDowell didn't pitch in a strikeout era when he had a 10.7 K per 9, which was the record until now. And he pitched in the 1960s, which were the pitching renaissance that caused them to lower the mound. And so you could say that, yes, it's a strikeout era now, but it also was there then.
True.
I think you really have to credit. And I don't know if we're going to do it now because Fangraphs just did it. I didn't read the article, but I saw that they did it. They wrote an article about how this Indians pitching staff may have been the best of all time because they set the record also, along with those other things. The pitching staff as a whole set the record for highest career war. They didn't have the highest starting war of all time. They had, I believe, the second or third. It was definitely a top 10 starting pitcher war. And they had, I think, the seventh best relief pitching war. But when you put them together, they had the highest of an entire staff ever in baseball history. So there's an argument, and war is adjusted per the era that the games are played in. So you should be able to compare equally a war from today and a war from 1920. That's one of the best parts of that stat that a lot of people overlook. You can't just say, oh, he struck out more guys or oh, he hit more home runs than a guy in the 1940s and a guy in the 1920s. You can't compare those things equally, but you compare war equally because they take the league average and they adjust for that. So for them, you know, for Kluber to be posting these numbers individually and for the team to post them as a team, it's incredibly impressive.
Hard to argue.
Justin is speechless.
I am.
And poor, poor Nick Goody. Oh, poor Nick Goody.
Yeah.
He's not, I mean, it's not like he's an incredible pitcher, but he did have a 12 K per nine, a 2.82 ERA, and a 1.09 whip, and those are just the numbers I have in front of me. He had a 6.5 hit per nine. His numbers are very similar to what Kluber's were. He allowed a few more walks than Kluber did.
He lost guys in a reliever.
Actually, he allowed way more walks because he walked 20, and Kluber only walked 36 for the entire season.
That's pretty impressive.
So, and four times as the innings. But the K per nine and hit per nine are almost identical. And Goody gets left off the roster. And McAllister, 2.61 ERA, 9.6 K per nine, best season in years. He gets left off the roster. And I'm not mad about it for 1 second. They both should have been left off the roster. That's absolutely fine. But you have to appreciate.
I don't want McAllister there, but Otero maybe was the only guy I could have said.
Well, and I think we talked about this already, that Joe Smith is Dan Otero, but better.
Because he strikes guys out in addition to
getting ground and balls. I didn't realize this until I put the stats at the end of the year. He didn't walk a guy this year. Joe Smith did not walk a batter.
He didn't walk a batter with the Indians.
No. But that's 2 months. And if you look at, like, his ERA was terrible, but his FIP was great. And I think that really points to him having a dynamite postseason.
Hopefully.
He's got your postseason experience. He's got your pitching you know, close to 70 games a year experience. I think he's going to have a really good postseason despite not having that great of a regular season because I think he got unlucky.
Yeah, I mean, if you're throwing strikes, you just have to.
Yeah, so I think
as long as he keeps the ball on the ground, I don't think anybody cares.
They're definitely set up to be dominant. I guess if we were going to ever make predictions, we should probably do it on this show, but I don't really want to.
It's hard to not be biased. And
I'm always biased. Yeah, when the World Series, every year we've ever done preseason predictions. I'm not pretending. I would feel the worst thing ever if they actually won the World Series and I didn't predict them at the beginning of the year to win the World Series. That would be the worst thing that could possibly happen. I'm not going there. So yeah, I'll say what I'm rooting for then. I want the Diamondbacks to win the NL because I want to go to a couple games live, and I'm not flying back to Cleveland.
I'm with you on that, and I like the Diamondbacks. I said that I think I was the only one to predict they make the playoffs in the preseason.
Oh, I can check that. We'll go over those I think next week because I'll be posting the article with it.
I'm pretty sure I said they were going to win the wild card. I think it was them and somebody that didn't win the wild card. I think it was the Nationals. Yeah. I think I had the Mets win the East because I was stupid.
Okay. Yeah, I was about to say you picked your wild cards. Both made it. You had Washington and Arizona.
Yeah, I just had the Mets.
Hey. Four for five is not bad. Because you had the Dodgers winning the West.
I thought I had good predictions.
Yeah, 4 for 5 is not bad, and it's not as ugly as Gavin picking San Francisco.
Ooh.
And Gavin only picked him as a wild card. Brad picked him to win the division.
Did some pick him to win the World Series or go to the World Series?
Brad picked them to lose the World Series.
Oof.
But that's just a teaser. We will do the rest of the predictions next week on the show.
Okay.
Really fun. This week was more about giving Justin shit for being an elitist.
Yeah, I don't care.
See?
Still don't care.
Is that the song to go out on this week?
I don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ever listen to Kevin Meaney?
Nope.
You're missing out. He's a terrible stand-up comedian. And
I don't ever do any of the musical references.
No, he doesn't do music except for then when he would do stand-up comedy and it wouldn't work. This is his song, and this we can leave it as you go. I don't care, I don't care, my jokes don't go over, I don't care, I don't care, I'm happy, go lucky, women call me plucky, I don't care.
And that is the show. Come back next week or don't.
Do-do-do-do-do-do.